Hi, listeners. This is a quick thank you for listening and for your ongoing support. If you're enjoying the program, please consider clicking the follow or subscribe button if you haven't done so already. It really helps us out. There's no better way to support us than doing that or sharing the show with a friend, colleague, family member, or any new or expecting parent in your life. It's totally appreciated. On with the show. Hi, I'm Sarah Trott, and welcome to the Fourth Trimester Podcast. I'm a new mama, and this podcast is all about postpartum care for the first few months following birth, the time period also known as the fourth trimester. My postpartum doula, Esther Gallagher, is my co-host. She's a mother, grandmother, perinatal educator, birth and postpartum care provider. Fourth trimester care, our topic, is about the practical, emotional, and social support parents and baby require. And importantly, it helps set the tone for the continuing journey of parenting.
Hi, this is Esther Gallagher hosting today's fourth trimester podcast. Sarah isn't joining us today, sadly, but we have a wonderful, wonderful guest, Monique the doula. The doula Monique Callen, and she's going to tell us all about her practice as a birth and postpartum doula, which of course is very exciting to me because that's what my career has been as, a birth and postpartum doula. But before we get started, I just want to remind our listeners that we have various ways that you can be in touch with us. We have a Facebook page, and we have a newsletter that you can sign up for. And we also have ways that you can help sponsor us if you're able and inclined to. Even just a dollar a podcast would just really, really help us out. We don't really have any personal income from this podcast. It's all personal outgo. But we love doing it, and here we are. Okay, so I'm so excited to have Monique on the podcast. I encountered her on Facebook quite a while ago, and we've just had our lives and not a great chance to connect via the podcast. So here we go. So Monique, I am going to hand the microphone over to you, metaphorically speaking, and just tell us all about yourself.
Thank you, Esther. Hi, everyone. I'm Monique Callen, aka Monique the Doula. I am a birth and postpartum doula, and I have been doing this work for the last 6.5 years. I am a mother of one very bright, very funny 7-year-old girl, and she is actually the reason why I began doing this work. Before I became a doula, I had never even heard of the word doula. I'd never heard of it at all. I was not educated in birth really at all, let alone home birthing or natural birthing or any of the things that we deal in. And I was actually quite afraid to give birth at all. I'd resolved in my mind that I would not have children because why would I want to do that? It seemed painful and scary. And, so when I found out that I was pregnant, I was terrified. And so my only thought was, I just don't want to feel any pain. And so I did massive amounts of research, just looking for what is the least painful way to give birth without having surgery, because I was also terrified of having a cesarean. And I had stumbled across the profession of a doula.
And yay! Then,
right. I happened to stumble across it. And I believe the first thing that I heard about was hypnobirthing. And So, but at that time, I was working for a nonprofit and was making basically donations. That was my salary. It was the donation. And so there was no way that I could afford a hypnobirthing doula. So, a friend that I went to high school with, I noticed on her friend list on Facebook that one of her friends was a doula and she lived in, Los Angeles. And, I was in Atlanta at the time moving back to Los Angeles. And so I contacted her and this woman, her name is Dara Baskin, and, she is, I mean, easily the most calm, loving, easygoing, sweet-natured, and yet strong person that I have ever come across.
Just what you need.
Exactly what I needed. Exactly what I needed. And when I connected with her, she became a friend, a confidant, a all-around shoulder to lean on. There was lots of drama and everything, which I'll talk about a little bit later too, going on during my pregnancy. And she was just very sweet and understanding and non-judgmental and helped me get through all of that at the same time, teaching me how to get my mind together and completely shift my thinking surrounding birth. And I ended up having a very empowering, non-medicated vaginal birth in a hospital. And, it was very much, it was just the most awesome experience. And I just remember as soon as everything settled down, I just said, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of women come into this profession that way. And then as I was, learning how to be a mommy, I realized how very hard and exhausting and almost cruelly exhausting sometimes.
Yes.
And that's when I learned about postpartum doulas. I was not able to have one, but thankfully I do have a lot of family who surrounded and supported me. But that was when I said, you know, this is something that women are desperately in need of, and yet it is a profession that is very underrated. And I don't think, I mean, the word, the profession of doula and midwifery is starting to again gain a lot of traction in our society. Postpartum doulas are still kind of under the radar, so to speak. So we're gaining traction as well, but this is something that I'm very, very passionate about because the fourth trimester is where we are made or broken.
Yeah.
And you know, there are so many women and men who are suffering from postpartum mood disorders and because they don't have the support that they need. And so I am passionate about seeing families healthy and whole and providing that support for them. So that's why I do what I do.
That is awesome. I resonate with every word of your story. I will say I wasn't afraid of being pregnant or giving birth. That part came very easily to me. I was very lucky in that one particular way, but
yeah.
You know, beyond just the logistics of finding a midwife. Like from there on, I totally resonate with every word you say, and people who know me know that the thing that really radicalized me was after having the baby and being alone in that. And, even the helpers who would help had, grave limitations. I think, and I was in a fairly normal situation as far as my physiology, and still needed care that I never received. So I'm thrilled to hear your story. I resonate with the difficulties of it, but I think that you're pointing exactly to the things that we don't know in our culture about, mm-hmm. and that we need to understand, and that here we are, we're in a profession to do exactly that support. And tell me a little bit about how you learned to be a postpartum doula. Since you, as you say, you didn't experience firsthand having a trained postpartum doula, tell me a little bit about how you evolved your practice, because like you, I didn't have a postpartum doula. But I, heard that there was such a thing, and I thought, well, yeah, that needs to happen.
I actually, what's funny is that, as I evolve in my practice and as I learn more and, add skill set, it's the synchronicity and serendipities and just the coincidences, if you can call it that I've been finding is that, every woman that I've met that is in this profession has said, it really is almost like a calling.
Yeah.
And that, some of the work that we do, we've always done.
Mm-hmm.
And, from the time I was old enough to work, I've worked with children and babies and women, and I've taken care of my friends' children and, accompanied them to the hospital when they've had babies and helped them to take care of their babies and, learned about remedies and, for diaper rash and all kinds of things.
Yeah, little things.
I've always done it. And so when I trained through Birth Arts International, and as I went through the curriculum, it really was like, oh, I do this. Okay. I do this. And it really was, it became a lot of the things that I learned about what women need was just, this is something that I need. This is something that I needed. And like you were saying, things that I didn't get, not because people, weren't willing, but simply that they had their limitations and that, they didn't know. you don't know. It's the thing is that you don't know what you don't know.
Right. I mean, how would your family who, I'm going to guess, never heard of a sitz bath, a postpartum sitz bath, know to scrub out your tub and make the herbs and put you in the tub with them.
Right.
I mean, of course they don't know that. My mom wouldn't know that. And she's a very loving, caring person.
Right.
Nobody did it for her.
Fortunately, there are traditions. Coming from, I'm an African-American woman. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of tradition that is passed down that we don't know why we do. It's just that the old folks said to do it. And so you did it. And so, I have my grandmother who's from a tiny town in Texas and, would tell me, okay, you make sure you keep yourself warm. You don't go outside for the first month. You keep that baby with you. Everybody shouldn't be kissing on the baby. Things like that we teach to our clients for their health and their well-being. that, you know, is tradition for, you know, a lot of cultures and, you know, to tell you what to do. So some of the things, you know, I got, some things are old wives' tales that, you know, I actually go through with some of the families of my clients, you know, that, you know, some stuff you can take and some you can leave.
Yeah.
But, so I was fortunate in that regard. But as I was going through the curriculum, you know, I did see that, like, there are lots of things that, you know, as women, in families like that, we just do, that I was just doing for friends, for, you know, other family members, that we just learned how to do. And, you know, and then just learning, like, this is such, I mean, I know people love to say, like, prostitution is the oldest profession, but you can't have the prostitutes unless people are born. So
exactly. Oh my God, I love you. I have said exactly the same thing, you know, myself.
The,
yes.
The oldest profession has to first be a midwife and then the doulas. So
yes.
You know, so
then maybe we'll get around to prostitution.
Right. Right. So
but only if we have to
come here. They gotta get born here first. So yeah. So I think it's just something that's innate. And then I actually just learned that my maternal great grandmother was either she passed away so young, and when my grandmother was only 15, but my grandmother just recently told me that she was actually like either the town midwife or she did something like doula work.
Yeah.
And she would go to the homes of the women who were having babies. And she said, I just remember as a little girl that she would, you know, she would take me and I would sit in the living room and she would go in the room and, you know, we wouldn't leave until the baby was here.
And that's so cool.
Right. Right.
And that's, yeah.
So it's in me. It's in my blood.
It's sure is.
What I'm supposed to be doing. So
fantastic. Well, hopefully you'll find a way to find out a little more about her, you know, in terms of all this. Maybe there's some kind of record somewhere. That is so great, Monique. I love hearing about those kinds of things. Well, so why don't you, if you don't mind, take us through kind of what a day or day-to-day is like in, say, the first week of care that you give your clients postpartum. Like, you know, what are the typical things that you might encounter with them and address?
Okay, so typically, if the client has had, let's just say, a vaginal birth, unmedicated, typically what I'm doing is I'm helping her with comfort for whatever discomfort or pain she might be experiencing after birth.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that also includes, if the client wishes, that also includes some herbal remedies.
Mm-hmm.
Which include teas, or I also make a herbal sitz bath for them. And for those who don't know, I'm sure your listeners already know what a sitz bath is, but like you said, you scrub the tub out, you run water as hot as mama can stand it, about just a couple of inches of water. I steep the herbs in a big pot of boiling water, pour that in, and she sits in it for at least 15-20 minutes. And that will help her to heal. It will help to keep away infection. It will help the pain and whatever discomfort she is having. And it also just helps her to feel better. Just, you know, sometimes some things we do, and that's another thing that I do. I make sure that she's able to feel like a person.
Yeah.
You know,
not an easy thing when you're going through such a profound transformation, right?
Yeah. So, and the first week I also help if she is wanting to breastfeed. I assist with breastfeeding because, again, she's a new mama and the baby is a new person. And so everything is a learning curve. And I do a lot of reassuring that she's doing a good job and that everything is okay. I think, you know, it's our society's weird. It's, you know, we have this thing where, you know, we deify mothers and we also demonize them. All in the same, you know, it's a weird, weird, weird thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, in ancient times, you know, it's not that women did not go through the same struggles, you know, as new mothers. Like, people still had issues with, you know, am I producing enough breast milk? They still had issues with, you know, I'm tired and all baby wants to do is sit around and eat. They still had issues with all of these things. The difference is that there were women surrounding them to show them what to do.
And they would have seen any number of these issues growing up.
Yes.
It just would have been around.
Which is just the whole thing. It's just the whole, when we normalize what happened, it's like when we watch, the only thing that we know about birth and postpartum is what we see on television. You're either seeing somebody who is just, you know, completely exhausted, zombified, and, you know, spit up everywhere with torn clothes and the house is just crazy. Or you're seeing somebody who is like floating on some sort of lotus petals and, you know, hair flowing in the breeze with, you know, the light just out of nowhere just gleaming on it. So it's, you know, it's
almost
like,
almost virginal, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
Like, it's almost like you're a virgin.
Like,
you know, you haven't ever had sex, let alone been pregnant and pushed a baby out.
Let alone an entire human being just came from your vagina. Like, that, you're at least a little sleepy, like, at least. And so, like, so part of what I do for my clients is just that, because a lot of us, even if we have children in our family, a lot of us we just have no clue what the fourth trimester looks like. And so a lot of my mothers in the beginning feel very inadequate and feel very much like whatever they do, it's like, well, you know, am I doing it right? Am I doing it? I don't know if I'm doing this right. Am I doing this right? And it's like, no, you're good. You're okay. You know, so that's what most of what I do is that. And along with making sure that, you know, their surroundings are, you know, suitable for them. So I'll do dishes. I'll pick up clothes. I might vacuum the floor. I'll do baby's laundry. I'll do her laundry, you know, things like that. And just, and making sure that she is getting rest. So, you know, sometimes that means, do you want me to hold the baby while you take a nap? And I'll do that. And, you know, so it's funny when you say, like, hey, what is a typical day? It's like, I can go through a day explaining it to people and they're kind of like, oh, so you're like a nanny.
No.
And I understand how people could believe that, but it's that line of thinking that kind of keeps women from asking for help.
Right.
Because when you think of nanny, you think of, this is a luxury. This is a person that rich people hire
to hand their baby over to
care of my kids when I don't feel like it or when I don't want to.
Yeah.
You know, and might I add, having a nanny can be important too. because sure, sometimes yeah. you don't feel like it. Like, I have a 7-year-old. Sometimes I don't feel like it. Yeah. I just, can we keep it real?
Sometimes, thank goodness for play dates, right?
Yes. And so sometimes, yes, we do. Sometimes we call our parents or our friends, can you please take this child? Because I'm going to, but that is a, it's a real thing, you know, and
it's real with newborns. Moms will yes. feel like, you know what, I've given every molecule I can give exactly. and I'm exhausted beyond my capacity yes. and I need
yes.
30 minutes to close my eyes
yes.
in order to get back at it, you know? So yeah, beautiful.
And it helps for someone because it's not just good for mom, it's good for the baby. Because yeah. we know we have all the studies about, you know, allowing newborns to cry it out and purple crying and all this stuff.
Ugh.
But these are things that happen when you have exhausted parents with no support.
Yeah.
And if they just, if mom can get some sleep and baby has a fresh pair of boobs to lay on.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what bosoms are for. Yes, that's right.
A fresh pair of arms to hold them in that awkward position that they've become so fond of, looking out the window. I mean, you know how it is. Like, baby, he doesn't want to lay this way. He wants to lay this way with my wrist all turned. Okay. So if there's a fresh pair of arms who can do that, it's invaluable because now you have a mother who is rested and who can have, while you're resting, and this is, it's so important. It's like, it's not about mom. It's not just about being tired. A mother needs that rest in order to recover from childbirth, in order to recover from pregnancy, in order for her hormones to go back into the alignment where they need to be mm-hmm. in order for them to, and that's with anybody. If you go in to a doctor's office and you have to have surgery or you've gone through some sort of trauma or you've had some major illness, the first thing the doctor is going to tell you before he sends you home is you need to rest.
Yeah.
It's the first thing they tell you before they write you a prescription of anything. Any great doctor is going to say, you need to rest. I know you feel okay. I know you feel fine, but you need to rest. Because rest is the only way that the body can rejuvenate itself. It's the only way the mind rejuvenates itself.
Yeah.
And so having someone like me, that's something that I also have to, I have some clients where this is like the biggest, this is the biggest hurdle for them to climb
mm-hmm.
because for some reason they believe that if they're not doing something, they're lazy.
Yeah.
So it has to be doing something. It's like, no, at this time, during this 4 to 6 weeks,
your job,
your whole job is to have a seat.
Yeah. Yes. Monique, I wanted to back up on a couple of things. And since mm-hmm. we're on the subject of rest, do you get the opportunity to kind of help your clients be well nourished? Because I find, or at least it's my belief, I'll say that clients will rest better if they're not hungry. You know, if they haven't been eating while they're breastfeeding, then the first thing they're going to need is to eat. And so I try to get clients to do eat when their baby eats because you can. And way they'll be ready to sleep when their baby sleep. But that means that in my practice, like, I often have to make sure that that food's in front of them, you know, prepared and in front of them. And so do you give much attention to that in your practice?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. I cook for my clients. And sometimes they don't want that, but I go into their refrigerator. Like usually the first thing that I do when I come into the home after our initial meeting and everything, the first thing that I do is I'm looking to see if she has water and food in front of her.
Mm-hmm.
And if she does not, that's the first thing that I do is go into the refrigerator, get something, snack, nuts, berries, lunch meat, whatever mm-hmm. is in there that is good for nourishing mama. I get it and I get a huge jug of water. And here mm-hmm. you go. You need to eat. You need to drink.
Yeah.
When's the last time you ate? That's the first question. When's the last time you ate? What did you have?
That is
great. How are you feeling? Are you having headache? Are you feeling weak? What did you eat?
Yeah.
I'm also very much I'm very much old school, so I'm very much a stickler for warming food.
Mm-hmm.
During that initial postpartum period, every client doesn't follow that, and that's fine. I give them whatever they will take.
Yeah.
Simply because you just need to eat.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to get something in there.
Yes. And so just like, you know, we have all these fights about what's best for baby, and, you know, we have the saying fed is best. Fed is best for mama. So we don't, you know, you want me to go to the hamburger stand? That's all you'll eat? Okay, cool. I'll go around the corner and I'll go get you a burger if that's all you'll eat. But you need to eat.
Yeah.
Eat the lettuce and tomato with it.
Yes.
Right. Please.
Exactly. Well, but usually with clients, especially if I cook, I'll come in and I'll tell them, look, I know this recipe. You're going to love it. It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, unless they have just an aversion to certain things, usually just a nice, hot, warming, hearty soup.
Yeah.
They all love.
Yeah. And don't you find, too, that so often, you know, assuming they've been in the hospital for however long, you know, two, 3 days, that they don't know yet how hungry they are. But the moment you put some good nourishing stuff in front of them, it disappears and they open their eyes wide and go, oh my God, I didn't even know how hungry I was,
I
you know,
every time.
Or they'll look at the portions I bring in, which are ginormous, and they'll go, oh, I'll never be able to eat that. And then it's gone. And they're like, wow. Okay. And I try to point that out if there's a partner or a grandma around, like, did you see what just happened? Mm-hmm. That needs to happen like 8 times a day.
Like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It also happens when they are thirsty.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't realize how dehydrated they are.
Yeah.
And then I bring them a huge jug of water. I have to drink all of this. Just sip. Sip if you feel the need to sip. It'll be right here. And then it's an hour later, it's, can I have some more water? I know.
Yeah.
I know. Because you have all of this to replenish. All of this came out of you.
Yeah, it basically goes in your mouth and out your boobs.
Pretty much.
Anyway, so yeah. Yeah. And yeah. The other thing I wanted to just make note of for the sake of our listeners is that, generally speaking, when we're going to provide you a sitz bath, prepare and help you have a sitz bath, we want to know that a good 90% of any swelling you might have incurred giving birth has resolved. So we're not going to put you in a hot bathtub if you're vulva is still pretty swollen and perineum is pretty swollen. Mm-hmm. But the herbs are typically herbs that will help resolve that last bit of swelling and the soothingness of the warm water and the rest that you get while you're in the tub is efficacious. So yeah, I remember when you were talking about it, I thought, well, if they think this is going to happen on day one.
No. What I do make for clients who do have a lot of swelling is the padsicles.
Yeah. Tell us about that.
Well, the padsicles are basically, you take the postpartum pad and you can put aloe gel, alcohol-free witch hazel, which is an astringent, and you can put make a tea of any herb that you like or not, but some of the herbs that I use would be maybe lavender, calendula, maybe comfrey, plantain leaf, especially if there's any tearing that happens. And you just keep those. You can mix it all together and then you pour it on the pad. Make sure it's on top of some sort of plastic or something. And you can wrap those in foil, fold them up, put them in the freezer. And once you're ready to, when you go to the restroom to change your pad, you put one of those on and it feels so good.
Yeah.
Those are really easy to make. You can, like I said, you can use herbs or not. I know everyone doesn't use them. And before I use any herb with anyone, I make sure that there are no allergies, and that, their doctors say it's okay. So, Padsicles are great for, right from the hospital for day one.
Yeah.
Through the first week. They're great.
That's even the kind of thing that I could imagine a birth doula who's going to visit her clients the next day in the hospital could bring in the cooler that she brought the placenta home in.
Right.
with the placenta pills, if she's managed to do those or not, you know, but give mom, you know, some padsicles to use while she's still in the hospital. I mean, they'll give you an ice pack. That's better than a stick in the eye, but, yeah. Oh, that's lovely. Wow. Yeah. And, you take great care of your clients.
And usually before we do the sitz bath, or if like the client can't do a sitz bath because maybe they don't have a bathtub. If the hospital gives you a peri bottle, putting that, the sitz tea, whatever, herb you see, putting that in a peri bottle and using that as like a wash is very soothing as well.
Yeah. And healing. Yes. Now, you have a 7-year-old. I happen to have an 8-year-old grandson. It's pretty fun stuff. What does she think about having a mom who's a doula?
she wants me home all the time, but you know.
Yeah.
It's funny because my family is, and I think this about most families, you know, in our society, we're not very open about sexuality and talking about it and using the correct terms for things. But, you know, when she was 2 or 3, really earlier than that, I mean, I was training to become a doula when she was born. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I had the childbirth books all over the place all the time. And so when she could thumb through them, which is old enough to just kind of look through them like a picture book, she did. And so she knows exactly what it looks like for a woman to have a baby, and she knows where babies come from. Not, you know, how they get in mama's womb, but that they come from mama's womb.
Yeah.
But
that's the important part.
Yeah. So she's all for it. She used to breastfeed her dolls and her toys.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, she's cool with it. She's very nonchalant about it. She, you know, she's at the age now where it's like, are we talking about babies again?
Yeah,
she tells all her friends, though. She's like, my mom's a doula. You know what a doula is? My mom's a doula.
Right? Right on. Yeah. And that is great.
she's actually her school. She's homeschooled, and so now we're part of a homeschooling co-op, which is more, you know, classroom time for kids who are homeschooled.
Yeah.
And a lot of those kids have parents who are doing it. So
isn't that great?
Co-op stories and it's awesome.
Yeah.
Wish there was more of that when my kids were young.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of cooperation. But it is great the way our kids just know stuff. You know, they know this whole realm of just everyday life with a certain kind of, ownership and agency that, frankly, a lot of their peers can't even relate to. I mean, they're the go-to kids because they know stuff.
Yeah.
And I mean, I remember my son when he was really little breastfeeding a doll. That's the kind of guy he is.
Hi, listeners. I have some exciting news to share with you today. We've partnered with Every Mother, your go-to destination for evidence-based exercise therapy regimens. Whether you're dealing with diastasis recti, preparing for birth, or navigating postpartum recovery, Every Mother has your back. With personalized daily routines tailored to your core and pelvic floor needs, they're here to support you every step of the way. Say hello to a stronger, healthier you with Every Mother. Visit their website today and use code 4thTrimester10 for 10% off your personalized regimen. That's fourth spelled out, F-O-U-R-T-H, trimester10 for 10% off, because every mother deserves the very best.
It's good stuff. Yeah.
She shocked my family on a few. I remember she might have been 3 years old. And
we right on schedule.
Yes, we were at a family function. I think it might have been Thanksgiving or something like that. But basically, everyone was in the room. And she comes to me. She says, "Mommy, my vagina itches." just you could hear
a pin drop.
You could hear a mouse dropping a pin. You could hear. Just the gasp that happened in the room, and they were like, "Did she just say vagina?" And I was like, "That's what it's called."
That's great. I love it. Well, so Monique, tell me a little bit about the community you work in. Like, who are your clients, and you know, what's your range, you know? And here in the Bay Area, you know, one of the things doulas ask each other is like, so what's your range? You know, do you go up to past Marin, and do you go down the peninsula? You know, people want to know kind of what the scope is on various levels. So why don't you talk a little bit about who your clients are and where and when?
I am in Southern California. And I serve the greater LA, Long Beach, through North Orange County area. A lot of my work as of late, has been with, in inner city with, a lot of women of color, as I'm not sure, if a lot of your listeners are aware of, the statistics of Black women and Black babies, that Black babies are two to three times more likely to die before their first birthday than any other babies in America. And Black women are four times more likely to die from childbirth and childbirth-related complications than any other woman in America.
Yeah. So if you don't think we have institutional racism in America, it's time to wake up. And we've posted on our Facebook page various, Facebook articles and things of that nature. So at least I hope our Facebook listeners are getting a clue.
We need to be aware. And so as of late, what I have been doing with myself and some other doulas that I've met is making sure that these things stop. Mm. No woman in this country should be dying because of childbirth. This is 2018. Yeah. It is ridiculous. Yeah. And the fact that we are the only industrialized nation where maternal mortality rates are actually going up.
It's insane.
It is unthinkable.
Yeah.
The fact that you have nations that are considered third world nations, like Jamaica, like some nations in Asia, smaller countries in Asia, that have maternal mortality rates that are actually going down,
mm-hmm.
and ours is going up, and we have a person in office who would think to really say terrible and horrible things about some of these nations where, at least their mothers aren't dying from childbirth. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know.
Yeah.
So now I serve everyone. I do. I serve all clients. And actually, the paying clients help me to help clients who are unable to pay.
That's great. And do you have an explicit understanding with your clients in terms of that? I'm curious.
I do. It's funny because on my website, I don't necessarily say like, hey, I have a sliding scale or sometimes mm-hmm. I do pro bono work. But I do believe that, you know, I come across, and that's even with paying clients, I come across people who need me, you know, and
mm-hmm.
who will ask me. And so I do barter with people for services. I've done that before. The last client that I had, she's a hairstylist. So we bartered, a few hair salon visits
mm-hmm.
with, you know, nice. My doula services. So, right.
Yeah. Hey, getting your hair done is not cheap.
Yeah. No, it is not, Esther. No, it is not. So, you know, and, you know, it helps me in my business as well, because you have to look the part. If you want to go before people, you have to look a certain way. So,
yeah.
But yes, I do go to clients and let them know that, I don't actually say to clients, I will do this for you for free.
Mm-hmm.
Only because I do believe in allowing people their dignity.
Yeah.
And that, energy has to be exchanged. And so it doesn't always have to be monetary.
Right.
So yeah. If I tell someone this is what I do and they want my services and they're excited about my services, usually they'll say, of course they ask how much, and they'll kind of say, well, you know, and I'll say, but I can work with you.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever we can work together. You know, don't walk away because you feel like you can't pay me.
Right.
So, because it's very important that, you know, everyone needs this support. Everybody needs this support. And so I do not turn people down simply because they can't pay me. So that's what I do. That's who I serve. I want to serve the community. I am learning a lot more now through adding more herbal services to my skill set. And, because we just are, the community just needs people who can, help them without people who can hear them, you know,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, women and babies are dying because there are people who are refusing to listen, bottom line.
Absolutely.
You know, there are people who are refusing to listen and refusing to hear the pain that people are in and refusing to, you know, to act believing whatever it is that they believe. I don't even know, you know, but, you know, there has to be people in the community that the folks out there can come to, and people who can advocate for them.
Yes.
And yeah. say, hey, you know what? She says her stomach was hurting. This is not normal for after birth. This is not normal. You need to take a look at what's going on.
Yes.
And sometimes that's all people need is somebody just to have their back. You know, and so,
I think so. I mean, it's yeah. been my experience with postpartum women, you know, as you know, and as we talk about on this show, you know, women are discharged from the hospital at whatever point they're discharged, usually within 3 days, and they're not seen again for 6 weeks.
Exactly.
They're expected to get in and out of cars taking babies to pediatrician appointments. They're expected mm-hmm. to do all their own self-care. They're expected to, you know, do any number of things. Mm-hmm. And of course, they're given a sheet of paper that says, if you have any of these problems, come back and see us.
Right.
But it has been my experience in the past that when my clients have gone back to teaching hospitals, for example, the people who are seeing them don't actually understand
no.
their complaints. You know, right. they're legitimate complaints, and kind of give them a shrug and send them back home. I've had to mm-hmm. actually, you know, much like a birth doula might do, accompany clients back to their care providers and say, no, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. this client needs to be seen. There's this issue. It's my theory that this is what's going on, you know, actually show up for them and speak on their behalves and insist that they be seen to appropriately mm-hmm. and not just shrugged off. And so, right. you know, that's a rare thing in the case of most of my clients, but when it's happening,
right.
you know, clients need somebody who actually has a clue. And it's extremely rare that if they have a partner in the first place, that partner has any idea
right.
of what to do.
Right.
Not only that person is usually going to have to be caring for the newborn while mom's being seen to.
Mm-hmm.
So mom still needs an advocate, right?
Yeah.
And hopefully one that has an idea of what's going on.
And that's the thing that people need to understand. It's like, and one of the things that I do that I've started to do is training the family.
Well, I was curious about that. You know, I'm always happy to talk to friends and family members who've offered to be of service
mm-hmm.
Because I feel like, gosh, you know, I can teach them a few things and they'll be so much more powerful.
Yes.
So tell me about that, Monique. Yes. Tell me about how you work with friends and family.
I have classes for the family called Village Prep, and it's part of a Village Harmony series.
I love this.
Yes.
I love the title you chose. What a great.
Because it takes a village. It absolutely mm-hmm. takes a village, and the village starts before that baby is even here.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to make sure that mom and her partner, if there is a partner, are squared away in
yeah.
what in being able to care for that baby. And
yeah.
so what I do with my clients, if they would like for, if they have a lot of family, especially who's going to be around, one, because I never want to come in and be the usurper, you know,
mm-hmm.
sometimes that is, especially in certain cultures, if, you know, with Black families, definitely that, you know, I'm a stranger.
Mm.
You know, mom might trust me. Dad might even trust me, but, you know.
But grandma doesn't know you.
Granny don't know me.
Yeah.
You know, auntie don't know me.
Yeah.
So I'm a stranger doing things that, you know, granny thinks she should be doing. Mm-hmm. And so what I want to do
And might love to do, right?
Right,
might,
exactly.
Yeah.
And so as doulas, and I mean, we are told that we do all we can to bring the family in and to help to delegate things to the family. And yeah. So what I want the family to know is what I know. Because when I'm not here, you're here.
Yeah.
So if you don't, I mean, you know, it's great to, you know, the money that I make, but ultimately my goal is to leave mom and dad equipped and prepared.
Yeah.
You know, and that's that. So if you're able to do, and the thing is that the more that I talk to families and tell families, like, this is what you can do, the more the families rely on me.
Yeah.
They call me. They call yes. me and tell me what's going on. I think she's got this happening. What do you think? Can you come over?
Yeah.
So that, you know, that happens. And so it creates a village. And I'm part of the village for however long I'm part of the village. And usually it ends up being forever because, you know,
oh, yeah.
you're with these clients and you're seeing them give birth and raise, yeah. you know, newborns. And so it's like you become part of the family.
That's right.
So, but in this, I teach the, you know, families, I ask the parents what their parenting plans are, if they plan to breastfeed, you know, if they're planning to vaccinate, you know, mm-hmm. are they having a home birth or a hospital birth? And so mm-hmm. sometimes these issues are hotbed issues for families.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
and so what I come in and do is I teach families like, hey, if we want, I know that everybody does not agree, but one thing is their parenting decisions are not personal affronts to you and to what you've done as a mother or father for them. It's simply their choice. And these are the ways that you can better support them.
Beautifully and put. So,
right. Right. Yeah. So, you know, it's like, yeah, when we talk about breastfeeding, you know, Black people, we have a very long history in this country with, you know, slavery and Jim Crow and things like that. And so, you know, we have mothers and grandmothers and great grandmothers and aunts who will say to us things like, don't spoil the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And that basically means like you don't have to pick the baby up every single time the baby cries. Well, these types of things come from slavery, from Jim Crow,
mm-hmm.
where you have mothers whose babies might actually be sold out from under them after they have them.
Yeah.
You know,
or if they're quote unquote lucky enough to keep their babies,
right.
they don't get to necessarily mother them. They might be in the big house breastfeeding somebody else's kid. Yes,
right.
exactly. Which is just,
so, and having a howling baby could mean death for you or that baby.
Yeah.
So you want the baby to be quote unquote good. You want
right.
the baby to be able to sleep through the night without you.
Mm-hmm.
You want the baby to be quiet as long as it possibly can. So these things are things that are deeply ingrained in our culture that we have to untie and unlearn and clear out, you know.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I have to go in and actually teach families, okay, here are the statistics. These are the studies that show why it's important for mothers to hold their babies when the babies cry.
Yeah.
This is why it's important for mama to breastfeed the baby every time the baby wants to breastfeed instead of putting a baby on the schedule. This
yeah.
is why. And so instead of, you know, saying, and I give them tools like, hey, like, these are things that you can say to voice your concern instead of this. So instead of, you know, when you gonna get that baby off the breast, you can ask. Like,
which my dad said to me. Yeah.
Right. I breastfed my child since she was three. So
yeah.
I've heard it all.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
yes,
I've heard it all.
You gave yourself plenty of opportunity to hear it all.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe you can ask in a certain way. And this is really the worldwide average for breastfeeding. And, you know, it is actually still nutritious for a toddler to breastfeed. It's just not comfort. It is comfort, but children need to be comforted.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing.
Right.
So, you know, and so I go in and I teach them and I tell them some things to look for as far as postpartum mood disorders, like something that, you know, it's not normal for mom to just not be getting sleep. It's not normal for her to be paranoid. Like mothers worry, but there's a difference between regular, you know, mother worry and anxiety. There's a difference between these things. And so it's not, you know, we don't diagnose, but these are things that you can look for so that, you know, maybe she needs some extra help. Maybe she needs to contact a professional. Maybe you need to alert dad. And even dad, because dads suffer from postpartum mood disorders pretty much on par with mothers.
Yeah.
And so it looks totally different, but, you know, they suffer too. And so they need support as well. And so making sure that families are, you know, making dad feel valuable and not just like he's just the extra dude in the room.
Yeah.
You know, which is how a lot of dads feel sometimes, you know, and sometimes they can tend to assert themselves in, you know, less than optimal ways because they feel like someone is trying to say that they're not valuable.
Right.
So,
yeah.
You know, even in these situations, in situations where, you know, maybe there's a single mother, the dad's around, but they're not together. And so these are kind of some, you know, real precarious situations where family is very important to, you know, and, you know, unless of course there's like some abusive things going on there. But, you know, for the most part, you know, people get together and they break up and it just is what it is. And so that we don't create any huge risk and, you know, things that are not necessary, this is the way that we can support him and support him being around and taking care of his child and the mother of his child, you know, without having to add any extra ridiculousness to the situation.
Right. It's not the time to resolve all your issues with your daughter's partner, you know.
Exactly. And
it's not the time to
really something about childbirth that just brings all the drama.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's excellent for doing that. But, you know, yes, and teaching people like, hey, and we can chill for 6 weeks. We can. Like we can chill on, we don't have to have any super deep conversations. We don't have to make any huge, big life changing decisions. We've already made the biggest life decision there is to make. You know, the baby's here. So,
right.
You know, and so these are things that I go through with some of my clients and their families. And
that's,
you know,
fantastic.
Just really trying to give them some tools and some, you know, because hey, I've gone through it, you know, I'm an unmarried mama. I've had some crazy issues with my child. Father and postpartum depression because of that. You know,
I'm right there with you twice.
Yeah, right.
So, in my case, yeah.
And, you know, it got really crazy when she was older, but it was crazy then, like after she was born. So, you know, I understand, you know, and not, you know, there's no shame or blame on to anyone, but I see in hindsight how my family could have handled things a lot better. You know, I could have handled things a lot better if there was someone there to kind of help us all navigate.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. I mean,
so,
sometimes just an objective,
right,
caring support person who can say, what if we set aside this issue for the next few weeks while we attend to these issues over here,
right,
you know, that are that are present and pressing.
And sometimes people will find that some of those things just really aren't important.
Right. Give them enough time, they just dissipate.
Right. Yeah. They just don't even matter. Like, it really didn't matter that, you know, this happened or that happened. And, you know, and with mothers too, you know, and my doula actually told me this, and, you know, I did some research on it, and it helped me a lot, because I know with families, especially with families that, you know, of single mothers, and say they, you know, she broke up with the dad, you know, a while ago. Usually when she has the baby, you'll see her start to want to be back with him.
Mm-hmm.
It is a biological response.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with she really wants to be with him, has nothing to do with any of that. It has everything to do with a biological evolutionary response for her to keep her family together.
Right.
And so, and that will happen. That she will vacillate between, I love him, I hate him, I want him, I don't want him, for at least 2 years after she has that baby. And
well, and you know, you think about it, like, you know, for 2 to 3 years after giving birth, the child itself is so biologically dependent upon the mother's body, right, to provide it with immunity and nourishment and protection. You know, when a mother has to be subsumed under all that, she kind of needs an umbrella over herself. Yes. And so naturally, you know,
she's going to look for the person who gave her that baby.
Yeah. You know, I think the assumptions beneath that are perfectly valid. Yes. You know, you're going to want your kid to survive, so you're going to want me to survive.
Yeah.
So maybe you're willing to do the things that it takes to have that happen, you know. Yeah. And so even though in our culture it's very confusing and confused, it does make perfect sense.
Yeah.
And so
that's what I think, you know, people need to understand, that it's like, we can't, as, you know, the supporting family and the extended family, then put more stress and more strain on her, saying, you don't need him, why are you trying to, why do you want to, you know, all of that stuff has to be by the wayside, and instead having some understanding and some support. And which is the reason why a lot of women, like, after, you know, you, like you said, like, you believe that, oh, the baby's going to change him. But that's simply a biological response. Because, one, the DNA of the person who made the baby with you is still inside you.
Right.
So you are connected to that person by your child.
Hear that, people?
So biologically, evolutionary, the evolution of human beings has made it so that you wish to be close to that person. And not being close to that person, it needs and deserves someone to hold space. So if that person is not there, you need to understand that woman needs even more support. She needs even more support, because there's a literally almost like a tearing away of a part of her that's happening. And so there is no person, hear me, folks, there is no person who can do this thing alone. It doesn't mean you have to be married. It doesn't mean you have to be coupled. It doesn't mean any of that. But you definitely need support. And you need support who is not, I like to tell my family, be a shoulder, not a boulder.
Yeah.
We don't need people crushing. You don't need to crush anyone. You don't have to go there with the "I told you so." You don't have to give lectures on why he's not great and why she's better off without him and all this stuff. She knows these things already. But that's not what she needs, is rest, nutrition, a shoulder to cry on. She needs space to be able to cry and sob and scream and mourn.
Yeah.
She needs that. Allow it. And be there. Yeah. Be there. Because that is ultimately what is best for that child.
And be there authentically. I mean, I think it goes a long way if you can say to your daughter who's bringing forth her daughter or son, you know, here's what I am available for to you. You know, I want to offer you reassurance that I love you. I love your baby. And that, you know, I can bring you a pot of stew once a week, and I can come for a visit of X amount of minutes or hours this time each week. And I'm committed to doing that for you. Now, that's some real practical reassurance. Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's like, okay, if I have to make it from Monday through Thursday, I know somebody's here on Friday. Yeah. Or if, you know, if I'm not going to be able to get to the market, at least I know I've got 3 days worth of food in the fridge. You know, whatever it is, that kind of actual, practical, and authentic. Like, don't say what you're not going to do. I mean, don't say you're going to do something that you can't do. That's not going to be helpful. And it's going to be like triple not helpful for a new mom.
You don't have to do everything.
No.
But you have to, and parents, I would urge parents to be, to really sit down, and this is another thing that I teach my parents, to really sit down and know who is part of your village. Everyone is not going to be part of your village.
No.
Who is a part of your village? Who are those people that you know that you can express your needs to? And if they are able, they will help and they will support. And make your needs known. People can't read your mind. If you don't ask, people think you got it.
Yeah.
If you don't ask, they think, do not try to put on a brave face for those who are coming to see your baby so that they can look at your baby, tickle your baby, and then leave you with an overstimulated baby through the rest of the night.
Damn it.
Yes. That is the worst thing at midnight when you have not slept since midnight the night before. So my advice to all parents is the only people who should be around are those people who are helping, period.
Yeah.
For that first, at least month, at least for the first month, 6 weeks is ideal. But at least for the first month, the only people who should be around are people who are actually supporting you, meaning people who are doing some laundry, washing some dishes, cooking some food, watching your other children. You know, those people, not people who are just coming to hang and watch Real Housewives and look at the baby for
and not notice that you could be sleeping when your baby's actually asleep instead of gabbing about what they did at work today.
Exactly. Exactly. And people, if all they can do is come over for you to be able to shower and take a nap, that's cool too.
Yeah. An hour and a half, you could really benefit from that. I think that's often what people who would like to help don't understand is, you know, the short visits are often the really actually efficacious visits, not the 3 hours, let's sit and talk about your birth. You know, it might be traumatic and triggering for moms to talk about their birth.
Exactly.
And they should be allowed to feel a sense of privacy around that. But, you know, they don't owe it to you to tell you their story.
No.
Yeah. So Monique, I hate to say this. We've been talking for an hour and a quarter I could talk for three more. I can tell, like I could just listen to you for hours, but we do have to wrap it up today, but perhaps we'll have you on another occasion. I feel like this is just great stuff for our listeners, who've had the benefit of hearing, Monique talk today. I also just want to remind you that if you're not lucky enough to live in the LA area where you can have access to Monique and her special services, one of the things that she pointed to in both in terms of supporting, new mothers, but in particular, this health crisis we have in America for Black mothers. If you get a chance, get the book, The Big Letdown by Kimberly Ehlers-Seals, and read that, whatever community you're in, because it's all about breastfeeding and how it's been undermined in our country, and some really great things to talk about in terms of what to do next. And like Monique, Kimberly is somebody who's actually done local interventions in inner cities to help change the culture, the family and neighborhood culture around supporting new mothers. So we can all learn more about that, right?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. And Kimberly is awesome.
She's awesome. Yeah.
Get her book.
Yeah. So, Monique, I am just thrilled that we finally got you on the program and that I got to interview you. I'm sorry Sarah isn't here. She's lovely. I hope we can do it again.
Yeah, I had such a good time talking to you, Esther. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, you're so welcome. And why don't you tell our listeners how to contact you, or just, you know, follow you if there are ways, social media, et cetera, that you'd like our audience to know about.
All right. Well, you can always go to my website at MoniqueTheDoula.wordpress.com.
Nice.
I am also on Facebook. You can find me at facebook.com/motheringmamas. That's MAMAS. And I'm on Instagram and YouTube at Monique the Doula. So you can get at me in any of those ways.
Nice.
Send me a message through any of those avenues, and I will get back to you. Really, I respond within a few hours, depending on if my phone is dead or not.
Don't do this in the middle of the night. She needs her sleep. She's a doula.
Yes, I am a doula, so yes, I have clients overnight.
We're talking about Pacific time, people.
Yes, Pacific time and daytime, please. Thank you.
Yeah, well, this is wonderful. And we will put links on our page for Monique as well. And we look forward to having you all listen to her show and future shows. And don't be shy about going back into our archives to listen to past shows. And we hope you have a great fourth trimester, one way or the other. Thanks again, Monique.
Thank you.
You can subscribe to this podcast in order to hear more from us. Thank you for listening, everyone, and I hope you'll join us next time on the fourth trimester. The theme music on this podcast was created by Sean Trott. Hear more at soundcloud.com/SeanTrott. Special thanks to my true loves, my husband Ben, daughter Penelope, and baby girl Evelyn. Don't forget to share the fourth trimester podcast with any new and expecting parents. I'm Sarah Trott. Goodbye for now.
Bicycle man, I know you're doing all that you can. I wrote the song, simple and true. I wrote the song, I'll sing a song for you. You got your wheels, you got your gears. You ride around town with how any fear. You got your pedals, you got your brakes. You always wear your helmet for safety's sake.
hello again, bicycle man. I know you're doing all that you can. I wrote this song simple and true. I wrote this song, I sing a song for you. Hello again, bicycle man. I know you're doing the best that you can. I wrote the song, simple and true. I wrote the song, I sing a song for you.